Well, good morning.
Good morning.
It's good for Ruth and I to be back with you. We always enjoy coming and worshiping at First Brethren Church. Maybe it's because of ulterior motives, I don't know. It gives us opportunity to visit with family and to have some fun with our grandkids. But we indeed enjoy your fellowship. I look forward to preaching for you. You may not look forward to hearing me preach half as much as I enjoy preaching, but at least one of us gets to be happy. We would encourage you, if you would, please, to pray for the First Brethren Church in Mexico, Indiana. We've been preaching there since January. They're looking for a pastor, and I think they're just real close. They have a pastor that they've been interviewing now twice, and they had he and his wife last Sunday and to meet the rest of the congregation and to have a fellowship dinner. And we're praying that this will be the pastor that the Lord will lead to them. And so if you would pray for them, we'd appreciate it. We've been there since January, and we grew to love them, but I'm supposed to be retired, and we cherish that as well. Have you ever wished that you could be wise enough to be the kind of person that would always say the right thing at the right moment? Well, I heard about a man who had that ability. It's a story about a fellow who was working in a grocery store in the produce department. And as he was stocking produce, a little lady came up to him and said, "Son, can I buy one half a head of lettuce?" Well, the guy kind of rolled his eyes and said, "Well, let me go ask the manager." He couldn't find the manager. He walked up one row and down the other until he finally found the manager in the back corner of the grocery store. He rushed right up to the manager and said, "Sir, there's an idiot over there who wants to buy one half a head of lettuce." And just as he said that, he caught out of the corner of his eye that lady. She had followed him step by step up one aisle and down the other, standing right behind him. So without even missing a beat, he said, "Sir, there's an idiot over there who wants to buy one half a head of lettuce, and this dear lady wants to buy the other half." They sold the lady her half a head of lettuce. And the manager looked at the guy and said, "You're pretty shrewd. Where'd you come from?" The man said, "I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota, where we have the greatest football teams and the ugliest women in America." The manager said, "Son, my wife is from Minneapolis." He said, "Really? What team does she play for?" I wish. I've always wanted to be the kind of guy that could always say the right thing at the right time. And this morning I want to talk to you about wisdom, not just the shrewd kind of wisdom that always has the quick answer. I want to consider the kind of wisdom that makes a difference. All of us want to make a difference. We want to make an impact while we can, because we acknowledge that we do not live forever. Life is so short. We're here today, and we're gone tomorrow. We want to know that our life counted for something. We want to be sure that we didn't waste it on things that really don't matter. Perhaps you recall these words of Jesus from Mark chapter 8, verse 36. "And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but lose your own soul?" Now that's a frightening thought, because it means that you can be rich, you can be famous, you can be popular by the world's standards, you can be at the top of the career ladder, you can come to the end of your life only to hear God say, "It didn't count for anything." Listen, if the soul is lost, the whole person is lost. Here's a sobering truth. You can't make a deal with God to get your soul back once it's gone. We need God's wisdom. We need God's wisdom because so much is at stake. That's such an important phrase. I want you to repeat it after me. Say these words after me. We need.
We need.
Oh, yeah, you're there. We need.
We need.
God's wisdom because.
God's wisdom because.
So much.
So much.
Is at stake.
Is at stake.
The little book of James brings us back to this point over and over again, because wisdom matters more. It matters more than money. It matters more than education. It matters more than good looks. So let me begin with a question. Imagine that you are in a vast congregation of people, and Pastor James, the half-brother of our Lord, stands and silently surveys the crowd. Suddenly, he asks a very pointed question. Will all the wise people please stand up? And that's all he says. A murmur goes across the crowd because they feel like, well, perhaps it's a trick question. Are you being presumptuous if you were dare to stand up? Who can be sure about something like that? It's uncomfortable to think about. It would be better if James has said, pick out the wise people and have them stand up. That would be easier. But here's what he actually said in James chapter 3, verse 13. He says, if you're wise and understanding in God's ways, prove it by living an honorable life, doing good works with humility that comes from wisdom. In other words, will the wise people please stand up? Now listen carefully. Wisdom cannot be hidden. The fool may keep silent, and for a while others may think them wise, but eventually the fool must speak and act, and truth will come out. Are you a wise person? Now, before you answer, let's take a little pop quiz from Pastor James. And in just one verse, he gives us four keys to wise living. Here's our key verse. Let's read it aloud together. Read this verse with me, would you? James chapter 3, verse 13. Read it with me. If you are wise and understand God's ways, prove it by living an honorable life, doing good works with humility that comes from wisdom. So what does wisdom look like in real life? Here's the truth of this verse in one sentence. A seeking heart makes smart choices that produces a beautiful life marked by a gentle spirit. Let's go through those keys one by one. Key number one, a seeking heart. A seeking heart. If you happen to be one of those people like me who love to take notes during sermons, that would be the first point in your outline. James chapter 1, verse 13 says, if you are wise, you need to underline that little word, if. Where does wisdom begin? Remember that wisdom is much more than the accumulation of knowledge. It's more than reading books. It's more than attending classes. We have all known very smart people who wasted their lives on foolish choices. You see, wisdom is not a matter of the letters after your name. Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 13 says, you will seek me and find me when you seek me with all of your heart. Say all. God isn't hiding. The Creator has put himself right out there in plain view. It would be like going to the Grand Canyon but never getting out of your car because you're checking your Facebook account. You come home and you brag to your friends, I've been to the Grand Canyon. You might as well stay at home. You didn't see anything. Now, don't miss this. The first step in acquiring wisdom is simply to desire it more than you desire anything else. Are you with me? If so, can I get an oh yeah?
Oh yeah.
Wisdom is free. Wisdom is free, but it'll cost you all that you have. Because it is supreme among the virtues, it cannot be had at bargain basement prices. You cannot become a wise person by accident. You must search after wisdom as if you were searching for silver or for gold. And it all starts with a seeking heart. Let me go out on a limb and make a bold statement this morning. Here's an important truth. Whatever righteous thing you desire in the spiritual realm, you have to want it badly enough. You have to want it badly enough. I don't think we appreciate the importance of that truth. You see, all you have to do is get your want-tos fixed. You all have a want-to? Now, some of you need to get your want-tos fixed. If you want to, you can walk closer to God. If you want to, you can be a witness for Christ. If you want to, you can learn to pray more effectively. If you want to, you can grow spiritually. If you want to, you can become a woman of God or a man of God. If you want to, you can break those destructive habits. All you have to do is get your want-tos fixed. Let me take one more shot at this point. You see, here's the truth. What you seek, you find. Oh yeah? Say oh yeah. This is true in every area of life. Many centuries ago, Augustine explained both the problem and the solution. I quote, he said, "Oh God, you have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they find rest in you." Listen, we will never be happy. We will never be happy until we put God first. And we can never do that until we surrender our lives completely and wholly to Jesus Christ. In the kingdom of God, everything begins. Listen, in the kingdom of God, everything begins with a seeking heart. Oh yeah? If you want wisdom, you can have it. It's free, but it'll cost you all that you have. And that leads to the second key to wise living. Key number two, smart choices. Smart choices. Again, look at the key verse, James chapter 3, verse 13. If you're wise and understand God's ways, you need to underline that phrase, understand God's ways. The word understand is the Greek word epistemon. Isn't that a neat word? Epistemon. This is the only time that that word is used in the entire Bible. It has the idea of being a specialist. Now, we all understand a specialist in the medical field. If you get cancer, you need to go see an oncologist. When your children get sick, you may take them to a pediatrician. If you injure your face, you'll probably need to see a plastic surgeon. A few of you need to make an appointment tomorrow morning. I need to make an appointment tomorrow morning. When you see, we see this type of specialization in every area of life. A gifted trumpeter devotes years to mastering the instrument. The individuals who play here on this stage are excellent musicians. They did not learn that overnight. A gifted opera singer works for years to develop their voices to the highest level. Here's a fact. No one becomes a specialist by accident. Oh yeah? You may have heard of Malcolm Gladwell, author of Outliers, who calls 10,000 hours the magic rule for greatness. Now, it doesn't mean that you'll be great at something merely by spending 10,000 hours working at it. But it does mean that you'll never achieve greatness without those 10,000 hours. As someone has said, it takes 20 years to become an overnight success. Now, I'm going to give you the only two ways I know to become a specialist in the Christ-like life. Are you ready? Say, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Here they are. People and pain. People. We learn a great deal simply by hanging around with people who are wiser than we are. That is why the Bible instructs older men and older women to mentor younger men and younger women. Young folks need good examples to show them how to make wise choices about dating and marriage and starting a career and raising children and serving God effectively. Christ followers, new Christ followers, they need to know how to pray and how to read the Bible and how to share their faith. They need to know how to make tough decisions that will honor the God that they have given their life to. Now, the other way to become more like Christ is through pain. No one likes this, but no one is exempt from it either. Listen to what Pastor James has already said. We're going to back up to James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. Listen to what he says. He says, "Dear brothers and sisters, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity of great joy. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. So let it grow, for when your endurance is fully developed, you'll be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." Job chapter 23, verse 10 reminds us that when we have passed through the furnace of affliction, we'll come forth like refined gold. Listen. If we cooperate with God, hard times will become an avenue for enormous spiritual growth. You know, there's gold, and then there is fool's gold. It looks like gold from the naked eye, but it isn't. And it's not worth anything. And sad to say, too many Christ followers settle for fool's gold in the choices that they make. Let me give you a simple working definition of the understanding that James has in mind this morning. It's the ability to make wise choices under pressure. The ability to make wise choices under pressure. Now, this is an important prayer request for parents to offer on behalf of the children, don't you think? Say, oh yeah. Pray that your children, pray that your grandchildren learn to make wise choices under pressure. You see, most of us can make wise choices if we have 2 days or 2 weeks to think about it. But life usually doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way for the young, and it doesn't work that way for those of us who are a little gray around the temple. You see, wise choices sometimes require split-second decisions every day. Decisions about what will we wear? Where will we go? Who will we go with? What jokes will we tell? What jokes will we listen to? What music will we listen to? What movies and TV programs will we watch? Will we stand up for our faith when the opportunity arises? You see, not only young people, but adults as well. We're on the firing line all the time. And we need to pray. We need to pray for ourselves. We need to pray for our children, that they'll have wisdom from God to choose what is best when they don't have much time to make up their minds. Now, there are two parts. There are two parts to making wise choices. Here's the first one. You must know what is right. You must know what is right. We live in a world where many people, it seems to me, have lost every sense of reason. They no longer can determine what's right and what is wrong. Everything appears to them to be in many shades of gray. And second, you must have the courage to choose to do what you know is right. Here's an important life principle that you need to memorize. If you do what you know is right, it doesn't matter what people think. If you do what you know is right, it doesn't matter what people think. Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
So here we have the first two keys. The life God blesses starts by seeking God's wisdom more than silver and gold. And that gives you understanding so that you can make wise choices under pressure. And that leads us to the third key to wise living. Key number 3, a beautiful life. a beautiful life. Again, look at our key verse, James chapter 3, verse 13. If you're wise and understand God's ways, prove it by living an honorable. You need to underline that word honorable. By living an honorable life, doing good works. James chose a very important word to describe the third mark of a God-blessed life. Some translations talk about good behavior, which is fine. We ought to have good behavior, but it doesn't quite get to the point. One translation calls it noble conduct. Now that gets a little bit closer to the true meaning. James used an adjective, kalos. Kalos. I need to say that again. Kalos. Kind of helps clear my throat. You see, kalos means beautiful. It describes something that is pleasing to the eye. Applied to people, it means beautiful by reason of purity of heart and life, not just outward beauty. So here's the principle. Live so that even unbelievers are impressed by your behavior. Live so that even unbelievers are impressed by your behavior. Whether we know it or not, listen. Whether we know it or not, unbelievers watch us all the time. They study us from a distance, and they pay close attention to how we do things. People who don't know Jesus Christ are watching how you handle problems at work. They watch to see how you dress. They watch to see how you spend your money. They watch you to see how you speak to your coworkers. They watch to see how you treat your spouse and how you raise your children. They watch you as you deal with difficult people and how you relate to other Christ followers. They watch you as you respond to tragedy that comes into your life. The truth of the matter is, usually we aren't aware that we're being watched. But here's the truth. Every day you're either drawing people to Jesus or you're pushing them further and further away. Have you heard Ruth Graham's definition of a saint? I like this. She says a saint is a person who makes it easy to believe in Jesus. A saint is a person who makes it easy to believe in Jesus. Oh yeah? Can I get an oh yeah? Oh yeah. That's a worthy goal for all of us. Now there's one final key to wise living. Key number four, a gentle spirit. A gentle spirit. Again, look at our key verse for today, James chapter 3, verse 13. If you're wise and understand God's ways, prove it by living honorable lives. Do good works with the humility. You need to underline that word humility. Humility that comes from wisdom. Now here's the final proof of a life filled with God's wisdom. Such a person lives with gentleness. The Greek word used here is paros. It's the same word, listen, it's the same word that Jesus used in the third of his Beatitudes recorded in Matthew chapter 5, verse 5, where he says, blessed are the meek, blessed are the paros, for they will inherit the earth. Now, to the ancient Greeks, meekness meant strength under control. They used the word to describe mild words, soothing medicine, a refreshing wind, or a horse that has been tamed. Now, what do those four things have in common? Mild words, soothing medicine, refreshing wind, a horse that has been tamed. They all represent four different forms of power that can be harnessed for good or for evil. a meek horse. It's not a weak horse, but rather a powerful beast brought under the master's control. Used in this context, meekness means my power, listen, my power under God's control. Isn't that exciting? Doesn't that just cause you have goose pimples on the top of your goose pimples? It's a character trait most often seen when dealing with disagreeable people. So what is this meekness? What does this meekness look like in real life? Well, here are three practical answers. Are you ready? Say, oh yeah. It's gentleness when provoked. It's boldness in the face of evil. And it's openness to the correction of others. Meekness is best demonstrated when you're dealing with unreasonable people. 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 13-year-olds, 73-year-olds. See, it's not hard to be gentle when life is good. It's not difficult to be gentle when there is no pressure. That's not meekness. That's niceness. Meekness is seen when you're under the gun. Meekness is seen when you're up against the deadline, when you're surrounded by problems, when you're hip deep in alligators and no way to drain the swamp, and you feel yourself getting frustrated. If you don't have meekness then, you don't have it at all. Here's the bottom line. Boldness without brokenness makes a bully. Did you catch that? Boldness without brokenness makes a bully. We need strong men, listen. We need strong men, we need strong women who will speak up for God without fear and without favor. Oh yeah? Oh, yeah. And yet sometimes when we hear a Christian speaking out, the warning bells start going off. For you see, it's too loud. It's too pugnacious. It's too angry. It's too quick. What is said may be true and may even need to be said, but it comes across dripping with arrogance and condensation. If we're going to be bold, listen, if we're going to be bold, and we should be, let us ask God for the meekness that makes our message worth listening. Otherwise, we end up sounding like bullies. Now, don't miss this. Meekness doesn't call attention to itself. Sometimes we talk about ourselves too much. We brag about who we know, about what we've done, where we've been, how much we own, how important we are to God's kingdom, because we want to make sure others give us the respect that we think we deserve. But Proverbs chapter 27, verse 2 says something very interesting. It says, let someone else praise you and not your own mouth. An outsider and not your own lips. Here's just a thought to ponder, something to chew over other than a brunch after church today. If you have to tell people how great you are, how great could you possibly be? Michael Jordan didn't have to brag about being the greatest that ever was. His play on the court spoke for itself. So the question comes, how do we develop this quality of meekness? Well, let me make a suggestion or two. First of all, it must come from the Lord. Meekness must come from the Lord because it's not a natural trait. And secondly, we only develop gentleness or meekness by being around difficult people. Do you know that? When Henry Drummond wrote his famous speech called The Greatest Thing in the World, he included these lines. He said, the world is not a playground, It's a schoolroom. Life is not a holiday, but an education. Oh, yeah? You've been there, haven't you? We are all enrolled in the school of life, and no one gets to graduate this side of heaven. Every man and every woman is our teacher. We have something to learn from every person that we meet. Do not complain about circumstances. You see, that changes nothing. Do not resent difficult people. That changes nothing. Do not moan and groan over hard challenges. That changes nothing. Ask the Lord, what do you want me to learn from this? You see, that changes you. So let me end where we started with a simple question. Are you a wise person? As we have seen, the question may be simple, but the answer isn't. We all like to think of ourselves as wise, but then we make so many dumb mistakes. We'll never walk in wisdom. Listen. We'll never walk in wisdom without God's help. Here's a reminder of the verse that sums up. Here's a reminder of the sentence that sums up this verse. A seeking heart makes smart choices that produces a beautiful life marked by a gentle spirit. Perhaps we could turn that into a prayer. Would you pray this prayer aloud with me, please? Lord, I know I can do nothing without you, because you are the source of all wisdom. Give me a seeking heart so that I might make smart choices under pressure. I pray for a beautiful life marked by a gentle spirit. Grant, O Lord, that others might see Jesus in me. Amen. You might want to pray that prayer often this week. And may the Lord bless you and keep you. And may the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. And may the Lord lift up his countenance on you and give you peace both now and forever. Stay wise.